Janae Angola Jr., the podcast.
I still feel really uncomfortable with that line of questioning. None of it's okay. Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Angola Jr., Janae Agumake. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And guests join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. What do you feel? Do you feel any better about that from yesterday to today, Janae?
Honestly, again, this keeps happening to me. I think it's been like a long week for everyone ever since last Tuesday. And so I've been sleep deprived, and then I've been using coffee, caramel macchiato, which, by the way, is it caramel or caramel? But that's another conversation for later, to fuel me. And so I think it's brought out the crazy in me. And so I forget that we're having these conversations. It just, you know, happens on air.
I thought for sure my mom had paid you off to ask that question as she tries to dig these up and cover these answers for herself. But regardless, yeah. So that was an exciting Thursday around
Janae Angola
Jr. You really
almost sweat. Like, that's the first time I saw you blush.
Yeah. Oh, big time. I could hear the discomfort all over again, and I realized, wow, I really sounded as shook. That was the verbal version of flinching in that moment in time.
When you get shook, your voice goes to Mike Golick falsetto. Like,
yes.
Higher and higher and higher.
The octaves got dialed up. There's no doubt the discomfort was high there. And we're going to try, and I'm sure we'll stumble into that again today. It's been that kind of week, though, like you said, Chinee, where we're all just looking for some sort of outlet in a lot of this one. Because, quite frankly, it's been a week with a lot more bad news than good in a number of ways. We'll get to some of the good news later on, especially as it pertains to Major League Baseball and a pretty historic moment there that we want to make sure we celebrate, Janae. But right now, so much of the news seems to surround college football, where as we stand currently, we've got 14 games either postponed or canceled this upcoming weekend. I saw David Hale does a great job covering the ACC for us, say 24% of the college football slate that was supposed to be this weekend, Janae, now going to be postponed or canceled. And I think at this point to say I have doubts about us finishing the season would be crazy, because I know they're going to make sure that that happens. But at this point, Janae, I'm very concerned about how we're getting there.
I am concerned too, and I think we've been sort of on this week process of, you know, talking through our feelings where we are excited to have college football out there, but now we're starting to get really concerned. I think the broad theme that we've been seeing is that it's no longer in the time period where it's March, April, May, June, July, the early summer, where we're getting news of one player testing positive. Now it's happening in clusters, and that's what you want to avoid, especially through, you know, these tests and then contact tracing. It's now numbers of people being tested and potentially being around someone that's positive or positive themselves. And now this is a situation that I think this week is extremely important. Like, we've tossed around these ideas like everyone should get together, all the conferences, all their commissioners should understand that in this moment, this is a moment where it feels like the season can get away from you, or you actually do the one thing that you've never done and communicate from a unified body and figure out a plan to make sure that this is the best process moving forward. This week has highlighted that things can come really fast, and I think you have to have a grip over the universal plan moving forward, or else it's going to be one conference over the other. And that's the last thing I'd want. Everyone wants a championship. Everyone wants that opportunity. And if we're handling things differently, that means you're taking away that opportunity from the student athlete.
Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Again, plenty of new news that's come up today. Coastal Carolina had their game postponed. Cal versus Arizona State postponed. And as Matthew Berry, who is an Arizona State alum who's very plugged in around there, pointed out on Twitter, the situation within the ASU football program is dire. The facility is closed. An entire side of the ball has it. Six staff members are positive, including head coach Herm Edwards, our former colleague. And they've described this as just the beginning of the outbreak. When asked to describe it, I was told, quote, this is bad, really, really bad. That, in addition to Utah and UCLA also being postponed, and that announcement there. All of that news coming on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. Janae Angola Jr. reminding you, be a part of Janae Angola Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football season's heating up. So is your favorite Dr. Pepper loving college football town, Fansville. Head to a store near you. Treat your inner college football fan to an ice cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. Now, Chiney, I want to play this for you. This is Bob Boolsby, the Big 12 commissioner, who also is, you know, and part of the College Football Playoff Committee, one of the major decision makers in this process. He was on SiriusXM, and he was asked about conversations around moving the College Football Playoff further down the road because a lot of this. Here's what he said yesterday.
We haven't come to any closure on it, but there is some latitude to postpone if that need should arise. And you know, I don't know that I see us playing a championship game in February, but you just never know.
Now, we'll be talking to our own ESPN College Football insider, Heather Dinich, who, as we've always pointed out, has her ear to that door of the committee room about as well as anybody. But, Chiney, for you, looking at the Pac-12 especially, because we started off this week talking overwhelmingly about the postponements in the SEC, but as we've seen later in the week, there's talk about teams potentially playing on Sunday of the sides that weren't affected by the virus but were affected by the postponement. Does this worry you about this conference in particular and their ability to finish the season?
Honestly, I think it's hard for everybody at this point. You're seeing conferences like the ACC and then the SEC, who started earlier, dealing with what in the SEC now 4 postponed games in one weekend. Big 12 then. Now we finally got the Big 10, who we're going to probably talk about today also what the situation is with Wisconsin, who's finally sort of emerged from their really rough situation a couple weeks ago. And now we have the Pac-12 that was excited to kick off not too long ago, a week ago. And even when they were excited to kick off, they took the longest runway. They had information, they had all the science and all that type of stuff, and still it didn't deter that first weekend. So I think this is just a reminder that as much as you try to plan and prevent something that's going on right now, that something is still dominating. And it's, and I'm speaking of, you know, coronavirus, it's something that it's hard to manage. And I think unless you have this universal centralized body that can at least put everybody on the same page with a very specific plan, this is something that could continue. And I know you mentioned how I'm so excited to hear from Heather because she's been dialed into all this, but she put a piece out on .com earlier this morning. And, you know, this is the idea that this is a moment. And she wrote, while multiple commissioners and sources have acknowledged discussions have taken place this week, they have centered around what one person described as, quote, broad hypotheticals. How could we be having broad hypotheticals when the situation is so dire? That's just my personal opinion. And then she also wrote that one of the major questions facing the sports decision makers is, what happens is if the playoffs is moved and one of the teams in a national title game can't play for another 2 weeks because of an outbreak or a contact tracing issue? Real situations, real issues that they're trying to plan for in the future. But the moment right now seems like it's almost out of their hands too. So I'm just like, we have to move from broad hypotheticals to actually addressing what situations at hand, because you can't get to that college football playoff without a plan that mitigates weekends like this weekend where you see so many teams, so many conferences affected.
Yeah, I mean, alone, and I just saw it in the graphic on our screen, 1, 3, 5, and 12 ranked the 1, 3, 5th, and 12th ranked teams in the country all not playing this weekend. So you're seeing all of that on a very human level. Hearing the volume in some places and the number of people that test positive is overwhelmingly concerning in this spot. And you're right, there's having a plan, but then there's also, you know, you can plan for a lot. You can plan for what's supposed to happen in the case of an avalanche, but then all of a sudden when the avalanche hits, and that's what it feels like right now, a tidal wave of news, it becomes difficult for anyone to get a handle on. And so this weekend, you're right, is a moment where the college football leadership who are dealing with these postponements are going to have to take a collective breath and look and wonder, are we doing the best by everyone involved, and is the worst reality maybe that our best might not be good enough? And oddly enough, I'm going to do this read right now. Tune in for college football tomorrow as Virginia Tech hosts Miami, presented by Goodyear. Coverage begins at 11:30 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. We hope at this point. That's all we can say about all of this right now. And for the best, clearest look at this possible, we'll be joined by Heather Dinich next to get that inside look and update on what the power brokers in college football are saying. That's all coming up next. It's Chiney and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
We hear that refrain over and over, but that doesn't help games get played, and it certainly doesn't keep people safe in a time unlike any other. It's Chiney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, Mike Golic Jr., Chiney Igwumike, and we have faced a lot in the world of college football right now in what we're seeing in the postponement and cancellation front and what that means for the bigger picture of this season. And to try and get some semblance of what that picture looks like right now, we are joined by Heather Dinich, our ESPN college football reporter, does such a great job covering all aspects, but certainly how this reflects on the big picture of the college football playoff committee. And Heather, just first and foremost, how are you doing today? It's been fast and furious, and I know if anyone's been working hard, it's been you today.
Well, thank you for asking and checking on me. I'm on my last leg. I'll try to put together some coherent sentences for you in the 6 o'clock Sports Center and see if any games are canceled between now and when I wake up tomorrow morning. But I'm okay, all things considered.
Heather, to that end, it does seem like every couple of minutes we're hearing about the latest postponement or cancellation. You put up a great article on .com outlining the big picture of the college football playoff committee. What can you tell us as it stands now with what you know and what you've learned since then on the prospect that we heard uttered from Bob Bowlesby, the Big 12 commissioner, yesterday of the college football playoff and its championship having to think about moving back further because of all this?
Well, I spoke with Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby this morning, and he was very clear. He said, we are not going to move off of that schedule unless we're forced to move off of it, and we aren't going to know that for quite a while. And it is clear that the commissioners have been talking about it more so recently this week and realize that they obviously have to have flexibility down the stretch, but there is a consensus amongst the commissioners, I'm told. The sense is to let's get this thing done on the days that they are scheduled to be played and just try to put a bow on this season and crown a national champion on January 11th in Miami Gardens, Florida.
Here with the indefatigable Heather Dinich, our own ESPN college football reporter who's always got the scoop and forgets about sleep, but we appreciate you for all the grind you do. How panicked are college football leadership members or even commissioners right now after looking at all the cancellations and postponements this weekend?
I think SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey summed it up the best this week earlier when he said he is shaken, not deterred. And those were unusually emotional words, if you will, for Greg Sankey, who is very reserved and calculated and chooses his words extremely carefully. And I think that it's reflective of the feeling, really, from coast to coast, from college football leaders and athletic directors, decision makers in the sport. They're rattled by what we're seeing this week, but they are also determined, if they can, to get these games rescheduled and played. And I think you saw that in the SEC today. Earlier, it was announced that they are going to use December 19th as a makeup date. That's the day of the SEC championship game. The teams that aren't in that game, obviously, would be able to use it as a makeup date.
Talking to Heather Dinich with us here on Chinay and Golic Jr., Mike Golic Jr., Chinay and Gwumike here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. And Heather, to that end, we talk about the December 19th makeup date potentially. Obviously, they got to factor in figuring out who's going to play in that championship game at this point. And for some conferences like the Big Ten, we know we're looking at minimum thresholds that are already being challenged to be eligible for those games. Has there been any indication of how that's going to affect the way someone like the playoff committee tries to judge what's going on right now? As it seems more and more like a reality, we're going to have nothing close to even or comparable schedules and results for a lot of these teams.
Right, we're not. And the selection committee is going to have to deal with the resumes that they are dealt, and it's going to be the most difficult decision and debates that they have had to this point. I think, just in knowing what I know about the way they judge these committees, because strength of schedule is going to look so different this year without those marquee non-conference matchups, no ACC versus SEC to help balance out those leagues, no Oregon versus Ohio State to help balance out those leagues, I think that they are going to further rely on eye tests, watching Ohio State, Justin Fields, 11 touchdowns to 11 incompletions this point, which is just absurd. Who are who looks like the best four teams in the country. And yes, every single game does matter. And, you know, American Athletic Conference Commissioner Mike Oresko has told me repeatedly every game should matter. He points out the first year of the playoff, remember when the Big 12 didn't have its conference championship game? Remember what a big deal that was? Oresko is saying, hey, if Cincinnati gets to play 10 games and Oregon only gets to play six, that should matter.
Yeah, yeah, it absolutely should matter. And I think that's the essence of it, Heather, because today we've been hearing, especially with all of the news when it comes to, you know, these postponements or the situations they're dealing with, you know, with the games this weekend, we've heard a lot of kumbaya energy. Like, this is the moment where everyone should come together, as many powers as possible, and try to find a collaborative way to try to ensure that everyone, as many people, has good opportunities to make the college football playoff by having as many games as possible. What solutions do you think could be put in place right now so that as many conferences can compete?
In this year's college football playoff?
Yeah.
I think the window has closed for expanding this thing. Pac-12 commissioner, is an experiment. Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott asked his fellow commissioners about a month, maybe a month and a half or so ago, to consider expanding it to eight teams this year because of the coronavirus pandemic, and there was not enough support in the room to do that. And Greg Sankey touched on this a little bit earlier this week when he pointed out that if you were to expand it, it would be more difficult to try and get more games added onto the schedule. And they're simply hoping to cross the finish line and get the games that are already in into this thing. So I think that the opportunity for expansion down the road is there. In fact, I'll say I think playoff expansion is inevitable at some point, but I don't think it would help them this year. I think they're just keeping their fingers crossed they could play the games they have.
What about the solutions? Sorry, let me clarify. The solutions, at least when dealing with finding ways to make sure you mitigate as many people, you know, dealing with the virus, you know, are there any solutions that they have when attacking the COVID crisis so that all these postponements hopefully get mitigated and we're not seeing more in the future?
So I guess the best answer to that question is simply the protocols that they already have in place. I don't see them making any changes to them. And honestly, what is getting the SEC this week is not the positive test. It is the contact tracing. You look at a program like Texas A&M, and their athletic director, Ross Bjork, told me earlier this week they only had three positive tests. But their game against Tennessee has been postponed because of contact tracing. That's a 14-day quarantine period. You cannot test out of that. That's a national thing. It's also in the SEC protocols. But you look at Missouri. I was also told there that they had one positive test on Sunday, and the contact tracing decimated one position group so that they were below the number and they couldn't play. So those are the issues that a lot of these schools are dealing with in the SEC is the 14 days.
It's been extremely difficult for everybody to juggle, Heather, but everyone has certainly given it their best effort, yourself included. So we appreciate the time and information. Hopefully you get to enjoy some sleep here soon. Thanks, Heather.
Thank you, guys.
The great Heather Dinich with us here on Chenea and Golic Jr. giving us an update on certainly a difficult situation in the college football playoff. We'll try and continue to keep you posted on any news as it becomes available to us. And plus, coming up next, we'll try and also sort out an ever-evolving rumor mill around the NBA and one major superstar potentially heading to the Big Apple, not the one that you think. We will get to that after this word from ButcherBox. See, no one likes to actually go to the grocery store, especially during holidays. That's why there's ButcherBox. ButcherBox ships high-quality meat conveniently right to your door. From free-range organic chicken to heritage-breed pork, 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef, to fresh-caught seafood like salmon and scallops. ButcherBox has over 20 different cuts of meat to choose from, and their boxes ship fresh right to your door. For a limited time, ButcherBox is knocking off a big to-do from your holiday shopping trip by giving you a free Thanksgiving turkey in your first box as soon as you sign up at butcherbox.com/CJR. That's butcherbox.com/CJR. Back after this, it's Chenea and Golic Jr.
Chenea and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chenay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Our thanks to ESPN college football writer Heather Dinich for joining us in the last segment, helping get us caught up on the current state of a college football weekend that has seen 24% of the games that were supposed to be played postponed or canceled. College football is going to be finding a way to finish, though. They are more driven. More driven is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. And, Chenay, so much of the beginning of this show has been depressing as hell because that is what college football has been right now. And so I have a bit of a slump buster here right now. You heard Doug Brown in the update talking about the Masters going on right now. Four-way tied for the league, some notable names that we've seen up there. But this is a pretty cool one. I saw on Twitter, you can get us on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed as well, at Mike Golic Jr., at Chenay. But I saw this from Jason Sobel on Twitter. Said, never heard this one before. Zach Johnson says on a pre-recorded ESPN piece that he played his last 4 to 5 holes in last year's final round of the Masters while watching every one of Tiger's shots on his caddy's phone. That is incredible that even, Chenay, you can appreciate this as a pro athlete, even amongst the ranks of his peers, he was looking at that moment saying, yeah, you know what? This is a little some bit of history, and I'm not going to miss it over here, pedaling around on the 8th green here where I'm going to finish in, you know, whatever place.
That's kind of wild. It's like when, it's that cliche phrase, right? When your idols become your rivals. Right? Like,
but at some point, they're still your idols in certain spots. Like, it's a weird line to flirt with, right, Chenay? Like, I don't know if you had, like, we've talked about this before, like, those wow moments when you first get into the, like, respective leagues. Like, I can remember being an undrafted rookie sitting at a table with, you look at, like, Drew Brees. You're sitting across from him at breakfast. I'm like, what the hell is Drew Brees going to talk to me about in this spot? But you got to kind of turn the page quick.
Yeah, for me, it was when, I think it was earlier in my season, my rookie year, like, setting a screen on Diana Taurasi, knowing she was going to punch me in the stomach when I set the screen. And I'm still here. I'm still standing. And then, you know, I hit her harder. And then on the free throw line after that, there was a foul. She, like, comes over and, like, all intense and then sort of looks at me and is like, yeah, okay. Okay, like, pats me on the back. Okay. I was like, okay, I'm still here. Yeah.
It worked.
Idols and rivals. It worked.
It worked.
But everyone told me on the scouting report, beware, when you go and screen Diana, she will punch you. Again, she doesn't do this often, but, like, this was Diana a couple years ago where she's still wilding, right? So, so I handled it well. I was like, hey, yeah.
That is the importance of reading the scouting report right there. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. First off, always read the scouting report. You don't want to go out there and get dunked on or punched on a screen or anything crazy like that in these spots. But, Chenay, as we're trying to read the tea leaves now in this NBA offseason, we had an interesting development. We talked a lot about James Harden, Russell Westbrook, the future of the Houston Rockets yesterday. Well, leave it to our very own Jay Williams, co-host of Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin here on ESPN, and also our great NBA analyst, to bring up an interesting option that we hadn't maybe considered for James Harden. Listen to this.
Now, what I did also hear yesterday, through there's so many rumors and speculation around this, but I wouldn't discount the Brooklyn Nets for James Harden. The Brooklyn Nets have Spencer Dinwiddie. He's been sending subliminal messages about not wanting to be in Brooklyn. He's been out in L.A. for the last couple of months. They have Caris LeVert. They have a lot of assets. They want to try to get Joe Harris back, but they have a lot of moving parts. And Kevin Durant and James Harden and Kyrie Irving together in the same team, that could be an interesting play as well.
So, Chenay, we talk so much about the idea of Russell Westbrook going to the New York Knicks, maybe. What if I told you James Harden to the Nets to potentially pair up with whatever would be left of the Kyrie and Kevin Durant core?
I'm not mad at it. Because I feel like if James Harden wants to win a ring, he has a right to, you know, sort of leave. Now, will he do it? Will he be able to defer? I would like to see that, preferably in Houston. Like if you want to defer, James, like, we can bring someone in. We got you. Okay. But yeah, I can see this happening just because I think James, he could either end up in Brooklyn, a scenario where if you think about these guys, Kyrie misunderstood. KD misunderstood. A lot of people, for someone who has rewrote the record books the last few years on scoring points and getting buckets, people have a lot of things to say about James Harden's game. And so I feel like the three misunderstood musketeers could link up. That could also happen in Philly. There are many places where James can go and be an instant boost in championship odds. For it to happen in Brooklyn, I understand. Jay Will always plugged in Brooklyn. Like, that's his spot. So I'm not surprised. I just would like to see him stay, possibly, James Harden, and then see what other pieces they can find elsewhere.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., two-time WNBA All-Star, Janae Agumake. Let's stick with the idea of Brooklyn, though, because he mentioned Spencer Dinwiddie and some other pieces that could be on the move in that. But we also know if you're Houston in this process, giving up someone like James Harden, like you just said, it's not necessarily something you're smiling and thinking great about. No matter what the ceiling has looked like so far in that career, you really think there's room for him and Kyrie on that roster potentially? Because that feels like if I was Houston, that would be one of the first places I'd be asking in this difficult spot. Kevin Durant and James Harden are used to and have played together before, back when they were all on Oklahoma City and that now famous picture of what that team once was in all this. And it could be interesting because I just don't see the touches necessary for someone like James Harden coexisting peacefully, less so with Kevin Durant, more so with Kyrie Irving.
I wish I could roll my eyes 100 times at you. I know exactly what you're doing. You're like, do you think these two could work? You know Kyrie and I are cool.
I know you guys are, and that's why I'm asking you if you
think it would be hard. I think it would be hard because Kyrie is a flow player, and he can play with another talented player, whether that is LeBron James or KD. But to add another piece in James Harden, who also needs the ball in his hands, I don't see that necessarily being the case. Now, a Philly where they could use someone if there's a Ben Simmons exchange, like James, his touches might drop just a little. And that's probably what he wants in order to win a championship. But like in Brooklyn, that is so much harder. So no, I don't really see those two necessarily coexisting unless they have like a pack, like bros, like we gonna do this come hell or high water. So yeah.
It's for some reason it reminds me of wedding, not Wedding Crashers, The Hangover, Blood
yes.
Brothers.
Yes.
We made a pact.
That's
up
what
on
it would take. That's what it would take for those two to play together.
And I feel like it's just a difficult prospect to think about in a lot of this, Chiney. But Brooklyn, I think, is one of those teams now where a lot of people are going to look and just see what can we plug in. Because, again, this seems to be a team that much like, and I compared them in the NFL to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because of the core pieces that are involved and because of what this team in the last couple of years has been able to accomplish without Kyrie Irving on the court, without Kevin Durant yet suiting up in that uniform.
Yep.
They look like a spot that's easy and primed for growth, especially in an Eastern Conference where, all right, you're looking at a bunch of teams that haven't really been able to get over the hump in the ways we expected, i.e. the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, the Tampa Bay comp is very good. It's plug and play plus stars. And it's not that easy in the first year, but I think they'd find a lot of success.
I think they would. I think in general, in this short year, you've talked about this, there are certain players whose game is going to be more predicated on being able to get up and go right away. And for this Brook team, and for Kevin Durant specifically, who's been on the shelf now for an extra long period of time, we know even there were talks about at the end of the summer, him coming back, going to be very interesting to watch whatever version of that team hits the court. But coming up next, we're going to see a very different version of baseball's front office right now, a groundbreaking and game-changing moment for all of sports that we'll get to next. It's Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chinay Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chinay Agumake. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the show, Pennzoil Performance Line. Plenty of news to get to today. Good news in this one. What to look forward to in the college football weekend that we're actually going to get right now, and how that's already changed on this one. And just saw this tweeted by Cal's actual Twitter account that now this weekend, remember, of the games postponed this upcoming college football weekend, among them were Cal versus ASU and UCLA versus Utah. ASU and Utah were both of the schools that had the COVID protocol affect their ability to go out and play. And so now Cal just announced that they will be playing UCLA Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific at the Rose Bowl. So unusual circumstances, Chiney, continuing to spawn unusual results in this situation, is we're now going to have Sunday college football going right into the beginning of the NFL window.
I'm not surprised. It's 2020. I think they're trying to do their best to ensure as many games still happen. And so I'm glad that they actually found a way to play. Honestly, I know it's not normal, but hey, I think that's the chance that you want as a student athlete making a sacrifice to play. So I guess we'll be double dipping.
I can't fathom what those coaching staffs are trying to work through right now on the Friday of a game week, finding out and delivering the news that your game was postponed or canceled during the course of this week, and now having to try and put together a game plan in roughly a day and a half to get ready for this game, and for the athletes who are trying to turn that all over. It sounds hellish, but again, you're searching and hunting for opportunities and all of this. The Pac-12 is searching for solutions, and this is where we wind up. So again, we'll keep you updated on all of these situations around college football as they keep coming up. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive is proud to honor our veterans by donating cars to move their lives forward, especially in times of need. Learn more about their Keys to Progress program and plans for 2020 at keystoprogress.com. Now, Janae, we've talked so much about the difficult news today, especially in the world of college football. We do have reason to celebrate right yes. now in news from Major League Baseball. The Miami Marlins have made history in the Major League Baseball. They've hired Kim Ng as Major League Baseball's first female general manager and first Asian-American general manager in Major League Baseball. And Chiney, she's someone over 30 years of experience. Most people would say she's been so overqualified for a while for this position. But to finally see that on the mountaintop, and I'd love to get your opinion specifically as you know a woman, a part of a league in the WNBA that breaks so much ground, to see someone else now creating a foundation for others to build on.
Love to see it. Love to absolutely see it. Like immediately I was like retweet. Just because it's one thing to be doing the work, but it's also another thing to be seen. And this allows a lot of young girls in particular to see someone that, oh, you know, I remember at Stanford, we were part of this like renaissance class in 2012, the year my sister became a senior. She went number one in the WNBA draft. Mark Appel went number one in MLB draft. Andrew Luck went number one in the NFL draft. And there's a woman by the name of Ashley Hansen who went number one. Amazing. But what I heard from the softball side was that they didn't have as many opportunities with softball, depending on the Olympics and all that type of stuff. So, like, even in the sport of baseball, for women, it's a different outlook of how you can impact. We've seen it through Jess, especially becoming the first, I believe, on ESPN Radio to call at that level of the World Series, making history, and to see history happen in the front office. It makes me feel really good. Now, culturally, I love this because this reminds me, like, we talk about Miami culture, and I think this is, like, the opposite, the best version of it, in the sense that we talk about the city and we laugh, but then, you know, there's certain cultural things that happen within franchises that I love to see. And there was a quote that Kim said, you know, earlier today, "I entered Major League Baseball as an intern, and after decades of determination, it is the honor of my career to lead the Miami Marlins as their next general manager. We are building for the long term in South Florida, developing a forward-thinking, collaborative, creative baseball operation made up of incredibly talented." Then she goes off to doing what she does and deflect, like, you know, but one thing I really loved is the synergy, because I remember hearing of the Miami Heat, Eric Spoelstra, how he started off, I believe, as a video coordinator and then ingratiated himself to that franchise. And now we see him as one of the greatest coaches. And, you know, so I saw a lot of parallels here between starting off as an intern, you know, seeing all aspects of the sport and then advancing and finding it within a franchise. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it's incredible to see that kind of work rewarded the way it should be, the way that we all expect in a lot of these instances. And I think we so rarely see, and that's been the difficulty for women in a lot of ways, in a lot of fields, especially around sports. Jeff Passan tweeted this out: "Forget just baseball. A woman has never been the GM of a major American professional sports team, period, until Kim Ng was hired by the Marlins today. Their COO, Caroline O'Connor, is also a woman. The Marlins' three highest ranking officials, as Jeff put it, are two women and an ex-shortstop who Kim actually, when she was hired as an assistant GM by the Yankees when she was 28 years old, in her four-year run there that was highly successful there on the field, one of the contracts that she helped in negotiating was Derek Jeter. So that's a relationship that goes back a long time. And Janae, that kind of brings up a point that we hear often, and we talked about this with the NFL's diversity measures that went in and were approved this week by ownership. Creating situations where there's familiarity, where you're in the rooms that create the relationships that net this kind of outcome, is so much about what the conversations we have around this are.
Yeah, and the thing is when you are exposing yourself to other perspectives, and this is, I guess, the big picture that I hope everyone leaves with on these Friday positive vibes, is a lot of times, I think the last few months, we've been thrown out of our own tunnel vision, out of our own little worlds, and now we're looking at each other left and right. and seeing each other for different perspectives and seeing each other sort of for the first time. So not only to have Kim Ng, you know, take this position, and then also you see the Lakers with Jeannie Buss as a woman, you know, win a championship. And then now you have Jason Wright, you know, with the Washington football team take these positions. These are all positive things that move us forward. It sort of hurts because it's like 2020. Why haven't these things been happening? But we do have to celebrate when they do, because that representation has completely changed the game for so many people, so many young people, so many communities. And that's why I love to see it, especially when it's, you know, and I hope I sort of made sense when I was talking about like the softball aspect, because the pathway is completely different, especially when you're trying to pursue your dreams and then you're going to have to pivot. But this was something that I was like, oh, this is the energy that will carry me through today.
It is. And I think what you said there, seeing that representation, is people can't undervalue that even in 2020. So a big congratulations there, and certainly looking forward to celebrating that more.